Turn the other way.
House Labor and Commerce will now come to orders, 3:22 p.m. on April 14th. With us, we have Representative Chenault, Representative Herron, Representative Rangbold, Representative Josephson, Representative Sadler, and myself, Chair Olson. Please turn off your cell phones. We've got three bills on the calendar today, SB 99 ADA development loans. Who's doing it?
414.
Jesse Logan, please read your name onto the record.
For the record, my name is Jesse Logan, staff to Senator McGuire. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee, for hearing this bill today. The purpose of SB 99 is to correct a few ambiguities in the existing statute for the Sustainable Energy Transmission and Supply Development Program, or SETS, which resides within the ADA programs. The main thrust of the bill was to clarify a few technical aspects of the SETS program that was created by the 27th legislature. The ambiguity derived from the one-third capital cost limitation as it relates to loans, loan guarantees, and bond guarantees. This is on page 2, line 18 through 26 of your copy there. The ambiguity was from the current statute as to whether the $20 million loan guarantee limitation worked in conjunction as a one-third limitation on the loans or was independent of that limitation. As well, the statute was vague as it related to ADA's authority to use the fund as a security for a bond guarantee. ADA has received requests from project components and banks to utilize the fund in which ADA needed the authority to issue a bond guarantee for more than one-third of the capital project cost. This bill just clarifies those ambiguities. Is that not loud enough? Additionally, at the bottom of the bill, ADA is granted bonding authority on two projects. One project for the Rare Earth Elements Project at the Boken-Dotson Ridge site for $145 million. And also at the Niblack mine site for $125 million. With that, I'd be happy to go over the bill in section or take any questions that you have.
It looks like you just went through the sectional pretty much, and fiscal note zero, so who has the first question? Andy?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Logan, relative to section 5 and 6, can you, and I've met with some of the sort of sponsors of the rare earth mines. I've co-sponsored the resolution last year relative to those mines, but I'd like a description. I know they're in the southeast. They're both in the southeast corner of Prince of Wales Island. I'd like a description of what this looks like on the ground, just so I have a sense of it, including a description of, I guess in one of them there would be a tailings move to Gravina Island. I know I can read all this, but I'd like to hear what you've got to say about that.
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative, I have representatives from both of those projects here in the room if you'd like to hear their explanation.
We can bring them up during public testimony.
Then I have another question.
Pretty well. You'll have one later.
I will. That's right.
Any further questions for Jesse? Seeing none, we'll open up public testimony. And James Sullivan, was he one of the people you're referring to?
No, sir.
Oh, okay. Well, James Sullivan, come up anyway.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
The other two didn't sign up.
Yeah. For the record, Mr. Chairman, my name is James Sullivan, and I work for the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council, a conservation group based throughout the Tongass. We've been here for over 40 years and worked on numerous issues dealing with the land and the resources in Southeast Alaska. We're very concerned about the two amendments that were attached to this bill on the Senate side. I'll start off by saying that we have no opposition to the original language in the bill. I thought the SETS was great in 2012. I still think it's a great piece of legislation. But we're very concerned that the way this is worded with the two mining projects, that particularly in the idea that ADA can now either own or finance these two operations, creates a huge conflict of interest for the state, who will be regulating them and being the watchdog group to make sure that they're doing everything up to snuff and that there is no controversy with how they're operating. This conflict of interest is not being addressed in any of the committees so far. These two also put the state on the hook, if you put them combined, I believe, for almost $300 million. And yet they haven't gotten a referral to Finance Committee. We find that troubling. This is in no way our opposition, saying that we don't think Ada does its due diligence. They have created a wonderful track record over the years. I know that within this, their authority doesn't mean that they'll actually finance a single dollar, and that in the future we could see anything between $0 financed to $270 million, and anything in between right now. We just think that this is an unfortunate step in placing the state in ownership of an operation that should be regulated. That comes there.
Any questions?
Yes.
Thank Representative you. Josephson.
Through the chair, Mr. Sullivan. ADA is generally about loaning money. Am I right about that?
To my understanding, yes. Okay. Through the chair.
So your concern is that we'd be loaning money to ourselves? How would that work, to your understanding, if we were the owner?
I believe that the conflict here is not that we're loaning money to ourselves, that we could potentially, 4 or 5 years down the road, own a project that we have to regulate, project. And as there are wonderful examples in the state of mining operations that have gone very well and been very profitable, there are also numerous examples of when mining has gone very poorly or where things have gone not well, and we've been left with the bag of the cleanup. We have an unfortunate example of Tulsa Chief Mine right here, just up down the river on Taku River, something that's draining acid right now as we sit here, and has been for years and will continue for years to come. It's these type of examples.
Was that a major project?
I'm sorry?
Was that an ADA project?
No, it was not, sir. It was a mining project, but it was a mining project. That's why I use it as an example, but it wasn't financed by ADA, to my knowledge. But it's just it puts the state in a difficult situation in the future. And that's why we're speaking out at this point in time, to avoid that possible problem in years to come.
Yes. Setting aside, and I understand it's an important set aside, but setting aside this issue of this conflict, my cursory review of Bokan Dotson and Niblock is that they're underground mines, and that at least on one of them, one is has a small footprint, the other one, tailing, would be removed to Gravina for processing. I guess and I'm sure that there's a 500-page novel here. That is, I'm sure there's a lot more to this. Tell me what concerns you have, if any, about the health of Prince of Wales Island from this. Am I right that this is, as mining goes, that this is relatively benign, or do you see it otherwise?
Through the chair, I think there are, I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know what situations will come up, but it's our feeling that any type of mining anywhere in Alaska should go through a very rigorous set of through a process for its permitting, and that should be constantly looked up to make sure that it is maintaining or working, operating in the way that it's supposed to. If there are problems do arise, and the state has already put themselves in a position where they've already put themselves on the hook for millions of dollars, and another agency within the state says, oh, well, we have to find them, we have to stop them, something has to happen. You've got the same body. I know there are different departments within this, but I think that conflict is very troubling. And how would DNR or possibly DEC at one point in time in the future, and it's just, right now, these are all hypotheticals. We don't know. We don't even know if these, mines are going to be financed. They're possibly years away from ever, getting that to that point. But it would be very troubling that if there are problems did arise, I know with Bokan Mountain, there's uranium there. There are many different issues that should be addressed and should be constantly monitored. And it's not about being pro-mining or anti-mining. It's about being taking care of the land that you are supposed to be taking care of.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Sullivan, you mentioned Tulsa Qua Chief Mine. You said it's not an ADA project. Is it even in the United States of America?
No.
Okay. You also mentioned you think that mining in Alaska should go through a rigorous state permitting process. Do you think the Pebble Project should go through a rigorous state permitting process?
If it ever gets that far.
Thank you.
Through the chair. My apologies, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks again.
All right. Thank you.
Ken Colligan?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ken Collison. I'm the Chief Operating Officer of UCOR Rares, or Rare Metals.
And you had a question for Representative Josephson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want you, sir, if you're willing, to give me a sense. The state is big. If it were Rhode Island, I'd drive over and take a look. What is this going to look like? I've been to Ketchikan. I've been all over Revilla Gigetto. I have a sense of it, but give me a sense of what this is going to look like when it's done.
Okay. To the chair, this is an underground mine, so it'll have a very small footprint. We're using a technology where all the tailings will be put back underground, and so there'll be no tailings on surface at closure. It's a rare earth mine. The ore is acid-consuming. The waste is acid-consuming, so there's no acid rock drainage issues. Basically, what you'll see is an adit or decline that goes down into the ground, so there's a 15-foot square opening, and then there'll be a couple of openings that come up vertically with ventilation fans on them. And then you'll see some buildings. You'll see a relatively small mill building, an office building, a camp, that type of thing. And that'll be about it. There'll be a waste rock storage area from the waste rock. From the mine, it's plus quarter inch, minus 2.5 inch rock. We're going to look and see if we can barge that out as aggregate because it's granitic rock. It should make pretty good aggregate, but we don't know that yet.
This is on the Alaska side of the border?
Yes, this definitely is on the south end of Prince of Wales.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Collison, just to give us a general statement, what would be the impact on the financial prospects of this development, Bogan Mountain, happening? Should the lending authority be authorized under this bill?
To the chair, this mine during operations will create about 200 full-time jobs, most of whom will come from Prince of Wales and Ketchikan. A typical mining job in the state of Alaska pays between $80,000 and $100,000 a year. So these are really good jobs that you can support your family on, get involved in the community. There'll also be indirect jobs created in that area and throughout the country.
Follow up?
And the product of this mine, where would it be utilized? Would it be shipped to go overseas to China? Where would it be used?
To the chair, one of the things we're doing in this project is we're putting in our own separation plant. It's a new technology that is used in other industries to, for example, to recover platinum and palladium from catalysts, from cars. And so we'll have that. So what we'll produce is 16 different rare earth elements. Some of the key ones being dysprosium, europium, and terbium. Their key uses is we have a contract with the Department of Defense because all of our high-tech weaponry that we use requires heavy rare earths. Electric cars, hybrid cars, wind turbines, solar panels, they all require heavy rare earths. Right now, over 95% of the heavy rare earths consumed in the world come from China. We'll produce just over 50% of the our country's needs for dysprosium, and about 10 times what the Department of Defense will need for dysprosium. So they're unique in their characteristics. They take a magnet this big and make it this big, which is why they're used in motors and generators and things like electric cars, hybrid cars, wind turbines.
Representative Chenault, followed by Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'm just curious, as what's the life expectancy of the mine?
To the chair, right now it's 11 years, but I think it's, you know, once you reach more than 10 years, you quit drilling, because if you can't justify a mine economically in 10 years, adding another 5 years isn't going to make any difference. And what I like to say is miners like to mine. The trick is to get it going. If you look at Red Dog and Greens Creek, they've both lasted two or three times what they were originally planned, and they both have ore bodies they haven't mined yet. So,
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much.
Actually, if I may.
Oh, Representative Joseph.
Thank you. Mr. Colgan, is there any sense in which processing some of the minerals across the water on Gravina is good for the environment? In other words, can you explain how that's a win-win?
Yeah, to the chair. That is what Mid-Black is proposing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we're going to process everything right on site.
Okay. And just one last. You mentioned 200 jobs. What kind of local hire efforts are you intending to make?
To the chair, we've already started to work with UAS here in Juneau, with the Ketchikan Indian community, with their Voc Center in Ketchikan, and with the people in Craig. They're building a vocational center in the village of Craig right now. Local hire is one of my pets. It's the right thing to do for the area, but it's also the right thing to do for the mine. I've built three mines in my history. This will be my fourth. And I always use the example where we built a mine in Nova Scotia in Canada. It was an open pit, small open pit. There were two people in the pit that weren't local. One was the blaster, because we thought that's probably a good idea. And the other was the shovel operator, because the pit shovel is worth about $5 million. We wanted him to train the other shovel operators. And there were two people as operators in the mill that were, as they say there, they were from away. If you haven't lived there for three generations, you're from away. And these two people were wives of some of the supervisory staff that we had. The rest were all local people. Mm-hmm. We had very low absenteeism. We had very low turnover. You have a really good safety record because you're not training new employees all the time. And it's cheaper and better to run your mine and cheaper and better for the community.
I'd like the record to reflect we've been joined by Senator Bert Stedman, who I believe is represents the area we're talking about. Let's see, who am I missing? You were. Sherelle? No? Thanks again.
Okay, thank you.
Pat Smith, will you take a few questions?
Hello.
Please state your name and affiliation for the record, and thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, my name is Patrick Smith, and thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I'm with Heatherdale Resources. I'm the president and CEO. And we have ownership of the Nimblack project.
Representative Josephson.
Thank you. Mr. Smith, the question I posed incorrectly to Mr. Culligan for you, sir, about the processing right across the water to the east. Can you tell us what that involves and why that decision was made to move your minerals over there?
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. And to the chair, in planning, we've got a very similar underground mine situation as Ken described for the UCOR project. We're looking at similar production rates as with Clinton or Greens Creek, which are 1,500 to 2,000 tons per day underground. And when we were investigating ways to improve the overall operation, we looked at the possibility of moving the material off-site, so mining it from underground, barging it off-site to a off-site location for the milling. And we looked at places in Alaska, in Southeast Alaska. And we had quite a few different options come forward. And the best option that we've seen at this point, and what we were really looking for, were power capacity. Because at the mine site, at the Niblack site, we would have to generate our own power through diesel or other means. Mm-hmm. So the hydropower capacity at in the Ketchikan area was a very big plus, and the infrastructure at the Gravina Island Industrial Complex. There's already a cable across the Tongass Narrows there and ready to utilize at that site. The other thing that was very advantageous to that site was the fact that the workforce can live there, can commute, can go home after work and have their kids in school there in the Ketchikan area. And, the third kind of very advantageous part of that is the fact that it's hydroelectric power, and it's I guess cleaner energy, if you will, for the mill site, which consumes a lot more energy than the mine itself. So It was a win-win-win situation for that. It provides jobs locally and looks very good as far as a trade-off against the cost of barging the material.
Okay. Paul? Yes, Mr. Smith. So would you not be using any chemicals on Prince of Wales Island, or would there still be some chemicals that would be used?
We would not. I can't say we wouldn't use any chemicals on Prince of Wales Island, but that would be where the mining was taking place. There would be, I'm sure, I mean, a stockpile. We'd have to monitor that. That would be on a pad. That would go on the barge, then the barge over to Gravina Island, offloaded there. That's where the processing would take place traditionally. And then in the case of Niblack, similar to, again, to Bulkan, is that that material would be a good portion of it, a large percentage of that would be backloaded to Niblack and put back underground. Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Representative Sattler.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. It's the resources room, so I'm used to hearing those kind of questions. Let me ask you a financial question. How does the ADA funding envisioned to this bill fit into your project financing? How much of it would be? Just give me some idea of how the financing works with you.
Right. We're at an advanced stage of exploration at this point. We've done quite a bit of, if you will, desktop engineering scoping work. At this point, based on the production schedule we've looked at, and we're still looking at different scenarios, we're looking, and comparable examples, we're looking in the range of $200 million as a capital expenditure for mine and mill and infrastructure and the rest of it. And that's a, you know, a very much ballpark figure, but that's where we're at. Mr. Chair, excuse me.
So your original business model was similar to what they're doing in Skagway, where they're bringing the ore down from around Whitehorse and bring it down to Skagway?
Well, I think that's, that's another ADA endeavor, right, the Skagway terminal? Yes.
And to the extent you can, what's the rest of your financing?
To the chair, our financing package, if you will, we still have a ways to go, right? We have to go through pre-feasibility, then a feasibility study, meet all the objectives internally for Heatherdale to make a project of this, and then the financing becomes part of a larger group of potential financing package, I would say, with ADA, with equity and debt elsewhere. It would come together in that means. Yeah. ADA would be part of that. And probably the most advantageous part of this bill is that we don't get, if you will, caught up in a time frame where we're ready to put that package together and get into production, and yet we have to wait for legislative approval for the ADA financing. This kind of removes a bit of that anticipation.
Thank you, Chair. I'm trying to get to is how critical an element of your financing package is the ADA funding. Would you do
not critical? No, I mean, excuse me, Mr. Chairman. The ADA financing package shows tremendous support by the state and by ADA. We have an MOU with ADA. We've got an MOU with Ketchikan Gateway Borough. We're going to be working over the next year, 18 months, on how we can both how the Gravina Island industrial site and ADA can collaborate to make that a workable situation. Sorry if that.
That's good. Thank you.
Any further questions?
Just a fast one. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Smith, does Heatherdale take a similar position to Mr. Culligan with Bocan that it's beneficial for your company to hire Alaskans where it can? Is that something that you endeavor to do?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. To the chair, absolutely. I mean, we've I think been very successful in that regard over the exploration part of this project. We've spent since 2009, we've spent $37 million approximately on the project. We've engaged with over 60 vendors in Southeast Alaska and the Ketchikan area and Prince of Wales Island. We have a partnership with Powtech, the Prince of Wales Island Tribal Enterprise Consortium. They provide all of our hiring and a lot of our logistical support, and that's been extremely good.
Thank you.
Lifetime on your mind, at least 10 years?
Well, I mean, it depends on the production rate we center in at. Right now, we're looking at 10 to 14-year mine life. And again, same answer to Ken Collison with regard to beyond that. I mean, I have every confidence that this mine will continue as others underground, that it keeps going once you get it up and going.
Well, thanks again.
All right. Thank you.
Ted Leonard, welcome back.
Thank you, Chair. For the record, I am Ted Leonard. I'm the Executive Director of BETA, and I'm here to answer any more questions that the committee would have on this bill.
Well, throw a softball. You do have some mining experience. BETA does.
Yes. Yeah. We were just testifying, Chair, to the Mining Association. We have actually approximately 29 years of a relationship with the mining industry through funding infrastructure, funding ports, and then also we have been involved in funding facilities. We actually funded the tailings facility for Fort Knox through a conduit revenue bond in the late 90s.
Representative Josephson.
Thank you. It's like radar. You're sort of anticipating me. I guess that makes me Colonel Potter or something. Mr. Leonard, what do you think of this issue about being the owner-regulator? What is your response to that issue?
Through the chair to Representative Josephson. ADA is a political subdivision of the state. It's an independent corporation. We are not a department of the state of Alaska. So there is a major firewall between ADA and its investments and any of the regulatory agencies. Our balance sheet rolls up into the state of Alaska, but it is our balance sheet and our investments. And we have had instances where we have had to make agreements with DEC and regulation of Skagway Ore Terminal. There's been regulatory, not issues, but decisions on the Red Dog Mine that would affect us, and ADA would clearly never go to a regulatory agency and try to influence them. That's just not acceptable or probably legal.
Now, you've also done roads to mines, haven't you?
Excuse me,
You've
Chair.
Got roads to mining operations.
You bet.
The road to
yep.
Red Dog, didn't you?
Red Dog. We own the road and the port to Red Dog.
Representative Chenault.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ted, my question's probably a little bit different. How much money is currently in the SETS fund now?
In the SETS fund, approximately $67.5 million. And we just requested the appropriation or the transfer of the $125 million from SB 23, but we haven't received those funds yet, Speaker.
Well, I'm curious because I know there's another bill floating around here to take all your money out of the SETS fund.
Through the chair to Speaker Chenault, yes, it would pretty much wipe out the rest of the original funding of SETS.
And I guess I'm curious, and some of it does have to do with the RCA. I see here where ADA has loaned two amounts, $15 million and $8.1 million, to two different natural gas entities in Fairbanks. And I'm curious as how that's going to work out. I haven't kept real close track. I wish probably I had you in my office to ask these questions, but I don't. We've got $15 million going to FEG, which is Fairbanks Natural Gas, to build out their distribution systems, but then you also had that 8.1 going to Interior Alaska Gas, Natural Gas Utility, to fund initial development work, such as engineering on their distribution system and affiliated infrastructure. I realize these are 20-year negotiated loans, but how is that set with what we have going, and if the $67 million in this SETS fund goes away because of another piece of legislation, what effect is that going to have on you in fulfilling any of these obligations either to either one of these two projects?
Through the chair to Speaker Chenault. Actually, it will not affect the loan obligations for these two loans due to the fact that they're from the second $125 million. There are two loans, one to, as the Speaker said, Def and G for $15 million, and that one is for initial build-out and 14 of pipes for their system. And then again, Speaker, you're correct that the other one is to start the development of that second service area that sort of surrounds F and G. What the capital project will do to ADA is it will stop ADA's ability to fund other projects for renewable energy, such as a wind farm, a couple other projects. So in essence, the SETS fund will pretty much become a holding fund for funding the IEP and any future projects that the legislature will fund. It won't be an ongoing fund per se.
Mr. Chairman, if I could, just another follow-up. I'm just looking at these.
Well, you bet.
I believe they came from you, or they come from somebody anyway. In one of these, you got current projects in the SETS pipeline is the REI natural gas liquefaction plant in Point McKenzie. Where is that project in relationship to any other work we're doing on natural gas right now?
Through the chair to Representative Chenault, we're in just a very preliminary pre-feasibility to see if that project would be feasible and whether or not they would be using cook inlet gas. So there hasn't been any true work on that. We are in the process of looking at a reimbursement agreement to analyze that, but that would be in conjunction with working with the Alaska Gas Development Corporation and any other activities. But
thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks, Jeff.
You bet.
Any further questions? Just a really quick one.
Representative Reinbold.
So I just need a technical question. IEP to me is an independent educational plan. If you could just
excuse me, Chair, I use too many acronyms. ADEM, we have a bunch of alphabet soup. IEP is the Interior Energy Project that was funded with Senate Bill 23 last year for the trucking of natural gas to Fairbanks and the build out of that distribution system.
Thanks again, Ted.
Thank you, Chair.
Is there anybody else in the room that would care to testify on this bill? Seeing none, we've got Dan Brockhurst, Ketchikan Borough Manager, online for questions if anybody has any from Dan. Dan, are you still online?
I am, Mr. Chairman.
Do you have anything that you want to add?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. For the record, my name is Dan Brockhurst, Manager of the Ketchikan Gateway Borough. I'll be very brief. The Ketchikan Gateway Borough Assembly has formally endorsed Senate Bill 99 in its current form, and I listened carefully to the testimony, and I think that Mr. Leonard, Mr. Collison, and Pat Smith have effectively addressed the issues that were raised by James Sullivan. So the borough endorses Senate Bill 99 and urges your support of it as well. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions for Mr. Brockhurst? Thanks again for joining us today. Is there anybody else online that would care to testify? Hearing none, with that, we'll close out public testimony. Does the committee have any questions for anybody? Sponsors rep? Representative Chenault.
I'll start, Mr. Chairman. I don't know who to ask this question. I see that we're approving by the legislative intent to the projects that the gentleman came up here and talked to us about. But also, I guess I had a question. Is the Niblack project, is that on Gravina Island?
Come on back up.
Yeah.
Answer from there if it's just a yes or no.
More detailed.
And read yourself back onto the record again, please.
Okay. Patrick Smith. President and CEO of Heatherdale Resources. Through the chair, to the question at hand, the Niblack project itself is on Prince of Wales Island, southern Prince of Wales Island, and the Gravina Island industrial site, or the industrial complex, is where we were talking about doing the milling.
Yeah, we're talking about two sites and one project, so I understand it now.
Okay.
Thanks again.
Thank you.
What are the wishes of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 99, version P, from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Seeing no opposition, the bill moves out of committee. We'll take a brief at ease. Back on the record, the second item on the calendar today is Senate Bill 140, ADA, Arctic Development Program Fund. Guessing we'll have some of the same players here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you again, committee, for hearing this bill. My name is Jesse Logan, staff to Senator McGuire. Senator McGuire again sends her apologies for not being in committee today. Mr. Chairman, SB 140 represents one of the principal elements of the Arctic Policy Commission's legislative package that was introduced by the Commission's co-chair in the Senate and in the other body. As you know, the AAPC is the commission created and tasked by the legislature to prepare an Arctic policy and implementation plan for our state and return that plan to the full body for consideration. The purpose of this bill is to attract the investment in Arctic infrastructure to pair with private investment from Alaska's Industrial Bank. Though ADA currently has the authority to invest in many areas that are covered in this bill, ADA has no specific program designed to attract private investment for infrastructure. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to go through the CS before you or the sections briefly or respond to any questions you might have.
Start with the CS. Well, I might add for the people in the room, the companion bill was carried by Representative Herron, and we have heard the companion. The Senate bill was moving faster and is the vehicle, but they started out the same.
But that, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The brevity of my remarks were because you have already heard the one version of this bill. Briefly, the sectional. Section 1 establishes ADA's ability to adopt payments for dividends. This 1 through 3 are really boilerplate, establishing definitions for net income and unrestricted net income and establishing a way for this fund to return dividends back to the general funds. Sections 4 through 8 make conforming changes to put the Alaska Arctic Infrastructure Development Fund in line with other funds within ADA, such as the CEFS Fund. Section 9 adds ADA to the types of programs to pay borrowers of loan participations that the authority can establish. Section 10 establishes the Arctic Infrastructure Development Fund, as the purpose of this fund is to promote the financing of Arctic infrastructure development. You can see it lists out on page 6, line 2 through 16, that what the fund consists of: direct appropriations, money and assets transferred from other funds within ADA, unrestricted loan payments, interest, other income earned. It also makes certain that this account is separate from other accounts established and can establish accounts within this fund. Page 6, lines 17 through 19 clarifies that the fund will be used for Arctic infrastructure development. Page 6, line 20 through page 7, line 21 establishes the powers and duties of the authority regarding the infrastructure development funds. And this section mirrors the powers and duties of the CEFS fund. It allows ADA to use this fund for Arctic infrastructure development, ensure project obligations, guarantee loans and bonds, establish reserves, acquire real or personal property, purchase, transfer, or foreclosure purposes, defer principal payments on capitalized interests, as well as enter into lease agreements, sales buyback agreements, build, operate, transfer, and operate transfer agreements or similar financing, enter into programs or agreements with the governments or entities, or transfer control of the infrastructure and rights of way. It allows for services to be contracted and money and bonds to be issued. This section also allows for for loan guarantees to be provided for purchase and repair of vessels in federally managed fisheries, or purchase of quota shares in individual fishing quotas in federally managed fisheries in the Arctic. The floor of those loan guarantees would be $7 million, and the cap would be one-third of the capital cost of the project. Page 7, line 22 through page 8, line 2 establishes limitations on the financing for infrastructure development. Those would be loans for not more than one-third of the capital cost, a loan guarantee that does not exceed $20 million. It allows financing up to 40 years and establishes that the fund can be used as security for a bond guarantee. Section 11, page 8, line 2 through 19, defines the Arctic as the geographical boundary. And page 8, lines 7 through 19, defines Arctic infrastructure developments.
Representative Josephson.
Well, that was a fast review. Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess one of the things I'm curious about, and I indicated as much in the companion hearing, which must have been in March, Mr. Logan, what exactly is envisioned here? In other words, I've seen the map. It extends all the way to Kamchatka, if I recall correctly, and all the way to the Mackenzie River. What is an example or three of what project would be developed with these loans?
Thank you, Representative, through the chair. I can't give you specific examples of projects that have not been proposed to the state yet, but the purpose is to attract those projects from private investment from outside the state or within the state. One project that could be explored is the Deepwater Draft Port that the Army Corps of Engineers is currently working on. They have identified several sites, and we all know that Port Clarence has been the most talked about. This fund would allow the Department of Defense or the Department of the Interior to pair with the state of Alaska on financing options. This has been done before with the U.S. Coast Guard Armory in Anchorage that recently opened and established the Coast Guard's first permanent presence in Anchorage. The use of the ADA's banks saved the Coast Guard a considerable amount of money, and I think was part of their decision-making in establishing that.
Okay. If I
follow?
Yes. In the previous bill, we saw that SB 99 would give specific authority to issue new bonds in substantial amounts. And here, you would be competing with other projects for this $67 million corpus?
Through the chair, this fund is not capitalized at all.
Okay.
And in SB 99, those issuance of bonds were outside of the SETS fund. That was a general ADA authority.
Right.
So this bill would allow this fund to be created, allow other assets that ADA currently controls to be transferred to this fund if the board of directors deem that. Okay. Or in the future, this allows a repository for earmarked projects.
Follow?
Yes, since the speaker is in here, and I want to be real clear, I'm not speaking for him, and I could mess it up, so I'm not, this is my question, not his. But I think what he seemed to say was, to Mr. Leonard, if I got it right, was how all of these things can be done if, indeed, the other body, I guess, is hoping to use some of the SETS funds to pay for the power plant at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. In other words, what's the viability of this? Or would this rely on a separate appropriation at some later date?
Through the chair, Representative, this would rely on a separate appropriation or a transfer from other funds within ADA.
Okay. Thank you.
This one is about a year or two behind the other one. I don't believe we have any projects yet for this one. Okay. Representative Salvin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Page 8, lines 16 through 18, that gave me a little bit of pause in the earlier version we saw. But I guess I'll echo what the previous questioners. What is envisioned by construction improvement of expansion facilities used in support of fisheries? That does not presuppose they'd be located in the Arctic, but just that's fairly broad. How much of a nexus does there have to be with Arctic activities, Arctic fishing, for it to qualify?
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative, this would be something that perhaps a dock needed to be built to house vessels that fish primarily in federally managed fisheries in the Arctic. But that dock may not be located in the Arctic. For example, if Seward wanted to relocate a fleet to that area and they needed additional capacity for that fleet or for the repairs of the fleet, if that fleet fished in the Arctic. These provisions here are designed to allow anywhere in the state to be available or to be eligible for these funds if they are supporting development within the Arctic.
Is follow-up, sir?
Follow-up.
There was discussion about a community development quota corporation that the fleet home ports outside, and they could use a port in Seward if were available. Is this aimed at that? Or?
Yeah, thank you. Through the chair, the fisheries provisions in this bill are designed to repatriate some of the vessels and quotas that currently reside outside the state. There's no specific mention of eligibility of any particular group, but ADA has own the authority only to operate within the state of Alaska. So if a vessel wanted to take part in this available funding, they would have to relocate to a certain extent. And if you have a follow-up question, of course, Ted Leonard is here for that.
I just wanted to flesh out, get a better idea. This is I don't see a specific restriction on being Alaska-based businesses either, so I'll let some other questions go before I horn in.
I think it came, when we had this last time, I believe the answer was if they were engaged in business primarily in Alaska, or mostly or completely in Alaska. But we can ask Ted about that when we get him back up. Any further questions, Representative Joseph?
No. Thank you, sir.
Representative Sadler? I know you have one. Representative Reinbold.
Okay. What my question is in this federal area, if there was a conflict between, let's say, mining or fishing or oil or whatever, who would be the agency that would make a decision or deal with any sort of dispute in the area?
Through the chair, I'm not sure I quite understand the question. A dispute between fisheries and mining?
Let's just say that there's, you know, multiple resources in the area. Who would be the governing body that would deal, if there were any issues in regards to this, who would be the deciding?
Through the chair, the same agencies that currently would be resolving those disputes.
Is that FERC? I mean, do you have any idea who that is?
I honestly don't know.
That's just what I wanted to know, the agency that would be involved, that's all.
Through the chair, possibly the National Marine Fishing Association. Our own DEC, Fish and Game, the same agencies that currently resolve disputes in federally and state managed fishery areas.
For somebody that lives in an area real close where it's both federal and state, it gets real interesting. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes somebody will assert themselves, and most of the time nobody wants responsibility, but hopefully it won't be like that. Representative Heron, you probably know this bill better than anybody in the...
No questions?
Doing
a good job.
Mr. Speaker?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry I was stepped out of the room. I did hear some comments going back and forth about City of Seward and what effect this fund could possibly have on business taking place there. It's not only, I believe, the fisheries issue, but Seward is also a major marine repair terminal, and so there's the good possibility, and they have in the past had ships into port that dealt with oil exploration in the Arctic, and so I think that's why that this could possibly affect them.
Well, I think I'm going to make your day. We'll be talking to Ron Long shortly from Seward. Thanks again, Jesse. Ted, why don't you join us? Mr. Leonard, I apologize.
For the record, I'm Ted Leonard, Executive Director of ADA, and I have a request for you, Chair. I believe that Mark Davis is supposed to be on the line, too. He's been working this mostly, but if not...
Yes, he is.
So I might need to use one of my get-out-of-jail-free cards.
That was easy, but but while we're in the room, is there anybody in the room that would care to testify on this before we go on to the telephones? Let's start with Mark. Mark, you out there? Someplace?
For the record, my name is Mark Davis. I'm Deputy Director of ADA. I was primarily to answer questions of the committee. But I did listen to some of the questions. It is correct that the fund would have to work within Alaska, the ADA statutes, and that would probably be refined by regulation. Second issue is the funding. This is an unfunded fund, unlike the current CESS fund, which has funds in which to operate.
But you foresee it will be funded at some time in the future, I would guess.
Mr. Chair, I think this fund, because it's aimed at large infrastructure projects, would probably be funded as the Interior Energy Project was. That is, the legislature would focus on, say, a particular port project it wanted to carry out, and then it could use this Arctic Infrastructure Fund as a vehicle to provide ADA with some of the funding that would go toward a public-private partnership funding mechanism.
Any questions for Mr. Davis? Got off easy, Mark. Thanks again for calling in. And with that, again, public testimony is open. And Ron Long from Seward, city manager from Seward, will have questions for or answers for Representative Chenault. Are you with us, Ron?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am. I'll try. I need to clarify that's deputy city manager. But thanks.
Could you read yourself onto the record?
No, it was absolutely correct. We do have a variety of industries that would be in support of development within the Arctic. Oil and gas is certainly one. Port development is another, where we might be a staging area for goods and services that need to do business in the Arctic but need to stage outside of the strictest geographic definition as adopted by the Arctic Policy Council. We want to see that take place in Alaska, and we want to be competitive with other ports in Alaska. But we want to tilt the playing field towards Alaska from development that is currently being staged outside of the state. As the Arctic Policy Council identified a bunch of needs and opportunity, they also identified significant private capital that's ready to support that development effort. And we want to attract as much of that as we can to Alaska in the same way through this program that other states use to attract the Nikes and the Boeings, et cetera. The fisheries that we talked about here, and I'm sure others will clarify in further detail, but we need to be clear that we're talking about Bering Sea fisheries. This is large industrial offshore federally managed fisheries that are not, you know, not against the coast or in conflict with any of the state-managed fisheries. We recognize that every port or not any one port can do everything to support development in the Arctic. If it's a response agency, they need to be close to the resource. They need to be close to the area. And if it's moving goods and services that might be closest and cost is not the prime consideration, it might be Dutch or it might be Kodiak. For areas that need road and rail access, we believe Seward is the right place. And I do need to introduce myself for the record. Sorry about that, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, that was a nice question. You were breaking up. Getting.
I'll try to answer any questions you may have.
And you just broke up again because I was talking over you. Could you read yourself on, Ron?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ron Long, Deputy City Manager, City of Seward, and I will try to answer any questions.
Representative Chenault? Nope.
I had no questions, Mr. Chairman. I just was making a statement. Hey, thanks, Ron, for calling in.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Long, and I apologize if in my absence the question was raised and answered, but how do you envision this financing tool being used in your community or your port?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to the question. In a number of ways, if the public-private partnerships that we've used, that we've seen work successfully at Red Dog or work successfully on the North Slope. And let's use fisheries as an example. Let's say there's a Bering Sea fleet. The CDQ groups, in regard to the earlier question, have allocated 10% of the resource to Alaskans. The other 90% is still being largely capitalized outside of the state. If we can create a new or augment an existing fisheries processing plant, And I am reluctant to use that a little bit for fear of calling to mind a particular fish processing plant. But if we have, because of the seasonal operation and the seasonal nature of the business, if we can expand their shoulder seasons to bring new product in, extend their seasons, keep their workers on longer through this program, through leveraging some state guarantees on private capital loans, then we've made that process not only more viable for the offshore fisheries, but for the state fisheries that it also supports. Okay. That would be one example. Another would be in port development. There will be piles. There will be dock materials. There will be lots of staging and logistics that can be heavy lift stuff that is going to need to be assembled before the short operating season for construction in the Arctic that we believe could be, we believe we can be competitive through this program and availing ourselves of some of that private capital to put those pieces together here and ship them up in a barge when the time is right.
Okay. You have observed you had some advantage over the other seafood processing plant by virtue of your proximity to the ocean. But I would also ask you, so would there be anything that an Arctic servicing port facility would offer that other Cook Inlet, Gulf of Alaska, fisheries could not also access. Would there be any limitations on it?
I don't believe there would. I believe we would open that up to, and again, you know, as Mr. Davis pointed out, some of this would be through ADA doing their due diligence. Each proposal will need to be a good business case. So we trust that they'll do their full job of due diligence and doing the measuring the financial aspects of it to make sure they've got a good and viable project before they sign on the bottom line.
Okay. Good. Thanks.
Well, thanks again, Ron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Sarah Lucan, you signed up questions only, but would you like to make a brief statement or open yourself up for questions? And thank you for joining us today.
Chmai, thank you. For the record, my name is Sarah Lukine. I'm the Chief Operating Officer of PT Public Policy, which is part of the PT family of companies. I wanted to briefly state PT's support of this particular bill as a whole, and in particular the fisheries provision. Mm-hmm. As the only private equity firm in Alaska, headquartered in Anchorage, focused exclusively on building private equity and investment in Arctic and Arctic Alaska, we are very supportive of this bill. We are hugely supportive of the fisheries provision, and I don't want to restate what Ron has already stated, so maybe I'll just end there and open it up, see if you guys have any questions.
Well, I've got the first one. So obviously you have a real interest in Seward if you have an interest in Ron.
Yes.
And probably 4th of July Creek or the land around 4th of July Creek.
Yeah, we have worked in partnership with the City of Seward, with the Association of Village Council Presidents, and APICTA, in particular with the fisheries provision in this bill. So, but I also really just like Ron.
I know when he was on the Borough Assembly.
Yeah.
Any questions for Sarah?
Yes.
Representative Jones?
Just an easy one, Mr. Chairman. You said PICTA?
APICTA.
APICTA, what is that?
The Aleutian Pribilof Islands Community Development Association. They're a CDQ group.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Representative, thank you. Ms. Lukine, so APICTA would be the CDQ outfit that would envision taking advantage of these opportunities to plus up the facilities in Seward and repatriate facilities back to Alaska?
So if I were to, we don't have a project right now in mind for this particular provision, but if I were to say envision a project for this community, for this committee, maybe it's a partnership where AVCP is a majority owner, APICTA is a minority owner, and they invest together using a loan guarantee from ADA to purchase vessels and quota that are currently housed, say, in Washington State. And they bring those vessels and quota back to Alaska specifically to fish the Bering Sea fishery. And then hopefully, they're required under ADA statute, would then have to house those boats in a port in Alaska. So maybe that's Seward.
Seward hopes it does.
Seward hopes it, yeah, that's right.
Okay, Representative Herron.
Mr. Speaker, I just would comment that Sarah is, PT Capital is an important partner for a lot of Western and Northern Alaska. But the issue that we're talking about is that we, when the Arctic, it's not if, it's when the Arctic opens up, where there's going to be a lot of resources that we'll be able to develop. And these will be world-class projects, not just mom and pops. But the bottom line is we need sustainable communities for long into the future. And using Seward as an example is that they're in the perfect place to help the Arctic by having fleets stationed there, as well as in Alaska, as well as smaller ports that are in the Bering Sea. So it's not only about development of fisheries, but we need response to accidents. We need a safe refuge for vessels that are plying our waters. And again, Unalaska and Seward are just examples of both established ports that will expand because of Arctic development.
Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you, Mr.
And I
Chairman.
Might add, Seward is a railhead and has been an export facility for coal for a number of years up until recently. And I'm sure that could be activated again easily. But thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else in the room that would care to testify on this bill? Is there anybody online? Beginning to wonder where everybody is today. With that, we will close out public testimony. What are the wishes of the committee? Representative Southwick.
Hey, a question for the sponsors, representative, please. The staff.
Man, you guys should just trade places.
Thank you. Through the chair, of Jesse, did the sponsor consider placing limitations on where these funds could be used? I hear about Arctic infrastructure, and I always kind of think that's infrastructure that's in the Arctic, but we're kind of talking about things that would service the Arctic but not be located. Did the sponsor ever consider a geographical limitation on where these facilities would have to be built?
Certainly. Through the chair, thank you for the question, Representative. On page 8, lines 14 through, I'm sorry, lines 4 through 7 define the geographical boundary for the Arctic as it pertains to this bill. The other provisions that would allow places like Seward to be eligible for these funds were designed to support the development within the Arctic.
Okay. So if I can read, so it says these Arctic infrastructure development means activity that's in the Arctic or in the state or in support of fishery in the Arctic. Okay.
Correct.
So there's some addition for that. Okay. Let's see, I'm not sure if you'd be the right person to ask. Well, I'll ask you and then maybe get Mr. Leonard. Where does the financing for quota share or vessel purchasing that's envisioned in this bill, how does that fit in the pantheon of other financial financing opportunities for fishing loans, for permit loans, for quotas, for boat loans? Is this the only such thing? Are there others in Alaska?
Through the chair, yes, I believe there are, and I'm not an expert on fisheries financing. But I do know that the floor of $7 million and the cap of one-third were specifically designed to not conflict with other state or federal programs that provide financing for fisheries.
Okay. The floor of, say again, please?
$7 million.
Okay.
And again, through the chair, the provisions that we're looking at specifically are on page 7, line 8 through 15, provide for loan guarantees only, no direct loans.
Okay. Fair enough. Good deal. Okay. Well, thank you.
Any further questions for Jesse?
Thank you, Mr.
Jim.
Chair.
Back to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 140, Version E, from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Seeing no opposition, the bill will move out of committee. Brief at ease.
Good fire starter.
Last item on the calendar today is Senate Bill 194, Tourism Marketing Board. And with us presenting the bill on behalf of Senator McGuire is Genevieve Watusik. Am I close?
Perfect.
And I might add the members have a CS in their packet, and I will entertain a motion to adopt the blank CS as the working document.
Mr. Chairman, I move committee substitute Senate Bill 194, Version R, as the working document.
And I'll object for purposes of discussion. Welcome back, Genevieve.
Thanks for having me. Members of the committee, through the chair, I'm Genevieve Watusik, staff to Senator McGuire. Before you have the blank CS for Senate Bill 194 Version R, and I can go into those changes after I explain the bill a little bit. This bill creates the Alaska Tourism Marketing Board within the DCCED. It's 21 members. One is appointed from the House, one is appointed from the Senate, and one is a DCCED member. The 18 members will represent Southeast, South Central, Southwest, Interior, and Far North. The categories involved in ATIA are accommodations, activities, attractions, transportation, cruise travel, tour operators, and DMO, which is Destination Management Organizations. The bill requires that the department and the board work together to plan and execute a destination tourism marketing plan for Alaska. The public members on the board serve at no cost to the state. And there's also a sunset that was put in the Senate Finance Committee for 2018. And the quorum is 9 and needs to have one representative from each part of the state. Version R changes very few things. On page 3, line 16, the language has changed from the governor shall to the governor may. and the next line from a list of three to a list of nominees. It also clarifies on page 3, line 31, and page 4, line 1, that the state does not pay for the 18 remaining board members. That is, they're each individual own cost. There had been a question about that in the intent, and we hope that this clarified that. And to that, I'm here for questions or concerns.
Representative Joseph Sutton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your name again is?
Genevieve.
Genevieve.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to call you Genevieve, but that's okay. Genevieve, how in the sponsor statement through the chair, it says the bill is an important step in continuing the growth of one of our most important industries. How does this do that beyond what's happening today?
Well, it doesn't change how it's funded. It just simply formalizes the board as being part of the process. So it's just formalizing the board. Hopefully that... The 18 members plus one Senate, one House, and one person from DCCED can create what they need to.
And if I may?
Follow up? New question?
Yes. New question is the bottom of page 2.
Of version R, sir.
Version R, correct. At line 30, it says that the 18 members appointed by the governor are members of the ATIA because that is the lead Nonprofit Tourism Association, correct?
Through the chair, yes, at this time. Yes.
and then at page 3, line 16, it says the governor may appoint members that are seated or list of nominees for each seat submitted by the that are on the Nonprofit Tourism Marketing Association. I'm just trying to gel the shall and the may there. So it's mandated on page 2, and then the governor might pick from there on page 3.
Through the chair, I think what they were trying to clarify that on page 3 was just that of how many nominees, and so it was just saying because it had said a list of 3 before, and now there's just a list of nominees that he may appoint from. And I think that's just what they were trying to clarify in the language.
Okay. I'm going to read this a little more, and I may come back to it.
Okay.
Representative Sandler? Nope. Representative Chenault?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Genevieve, as I look at this, I look at the breakdown of the tourism size industry, company sizes in the following regions of the state. My concern is that I see Southeast, South Central, Southwest, the interior, and the far north. What I don't see on there is the Kenai Peninsula. While we are part of South Central, we are a destination. And to me, we're as much of a destination as the interior, southeast, south central, or the far north. So I would be curious if anyone else has brought that up, and if they have, what the comments of the maker of the bill have. And that would be a concern of mine, Mr. Chairman, that the Kenai Peninsula, which I do represent, is not, in my mind, really represented by the south central. I understand that. What South Central means, but it doesn't give my folks comfort thinking that they may not have anyone sitting on this board of 18.
The Chair, Mr. Speaker, that has not been brought up in committee yet. I'm not sure if that's something that we've got some members from ATIA in the gallery if they wanted to speak on that after.
Thanks, Genevieve. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, something we can bring up with the sponsor this evening. We've still got adequate time to do something, even after moving it, if we move it. Representative Josephson.
Thank you. Back to this earlier question, Genevieve. Mm-hmm. It just seems like on page 3 that if the governor selected someone who was not on the statewide Nonprofit Tourism Marketing Association, they would have to immediately join to comply with page 2, line 30.
Through the chair, I would agree with that assessment.
So that may be something that I don't know if there's another committee of referral.
Through the chair, yes, it's going to finance after this.
I don't have a lot of heartburn over this kind of thing. It just may be something that they're going to ask you about.
Okay.
Residency, we can do that one.
Pardon?
Residency.
Sure.
For the board members. That's an inside joke. I've spent a lot of time on that in a different committee.
I know.
Representative Reinbold.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for bringing this to our committee today. And I understand my question might be outside the intent of the sponsor, and that's why a no answer will be fine with me. But basically what I wanted to ask you, is this strictly for tourism, or do you know if there's any intent from the sponsor to creating a 10, 20, 50, 100-year vision, you know, helping create that vision of what we want Alaska to look like in the future?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, I believe this is just to impact tourism at this point. There have been talks with DCCED early on about doing something with those other divisions, but at this point, this is our only thought with it, is tourism.
Can I follow up?
Follow up.
Okay, and thank you for that, but that's something I'm asking a lot of people on this question, because I think, you know, if we know what we want the state to look like in the future, it's just going to be a whole lot easier, you know, to manage, you know, where we put tourism infrastructure, where we get roads, you know, that kind of thing. So just, yeah, you know, just if you could relay that back to the sponsor, if there's any interest in that, I'd certainly be interested in talking to her.
The chair, I'd be happy to.
Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Chairman. It's been a while since I sat on finance, Mr. Chairman. But I noticed that the board consists of 21 members. But 9 members create a quorum. I don't know if that has happened anywhere else, none that I'm aware of, that a minority of folks that are at a meeting will create a quorum. So it's usually half or better versus half or less. So I'm just something I'm looking at.
Can I answer that? Yeah, through the chair, Mr. Speaker. It was 11 in an earlier draft before it went to finance, and Senator Fairclough on the record mentioned a commission she was working on with domestic violence and how hard it was to get a big quorum, and she suggested the 9 members, but with the intent of 1 member from each region, and so we agreed to that in
okay. Follow-up?
Yeah, just Mr. Chairman, as a comment, more than a follow-up. It's usually what happens when you get a big group together. It's hard to get everyone's schedule. So,
especially usually, during summer,
sometimes groups work better when they're smaller, just for convenience. But you're correct. To meet during the busiest time of the tourism business probably would create other problems. So. Okay, I'll look at it. Thank you, Genevieve.
Representative Herron.
Mr. Chairman, a comment to my colleague, and then I'll another issue I'll bring up is a lot of the tourists don't want infrastructure. They want to go a place where there's a lack of. And so I think that's an important quality that we share. And, Mr. Chairman, at the appropriate time, I'll make the Kenai Amendment.
Representative Josephson.
Well, I mean, just as a comment, I agree with the speaker that the Kenai is a unique standalone place. It's the most, arguably the most remarkable place in the state.
Could you hear that again, please?
I lady was saying it was God's country.
Now, the exception would be the University Medical Center of Anchorage. But, and I also agree with Representative Herron that some people want to be off the grid, and I also hope that if this board is created, that there will be some real concern for opportunities for non-consumptive use. Right? I mean, that's what tourists want as well. They want to see wildlife, and we got to make sure that that happens.
Representative Reinbold.
With all due respect, I agree. So, I mean, but that's not the ultimate point of what my question was. My ultimate question is, where do we want it to be, you know, natural? Where do we want there to be accommodations for tourists? Where do we want, you know, what do we want to see in 10 years, in 20 years, in 30 years, 50, 100 years? And, you know, what areas do we want to stay off limits or just be minimal disturbance too. So just a vision. That was my whole point.
Representative Sandler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Chairman, pardon me. Genevieve, on page 3 in the middle, line 16 through 19, there's a discussion about what happens if the governor rejects a list of appointees. I just want to ask, what's the sponsor's intent? Is the sponsor's intent that there be no duplication in a subsequent list should the governor not make a selection from the first list?
Through the chair, I'm not sure exactly on that answer, except for the fact that this is language used for other boards that we've used in statute, so it was taken from that. So I'm not sure about duplication on that.
Can I follow?
Slightly different topic.
Sure.
I just would say that if there's a member, I could understand the desire of the member from the university district to have a non-consumptive user, but I would be very glad to match that with a consumptive user to make sure that all aspects of tourism are represented on this marketing board.
Including medical tourism.
If any. Should it get that far?
Well, if there are no further questions for Genevieve, let's open it up to the public. Phil Pedlar, ATIA. Welcome to the committee, and please read yourself onto the record. You got our undivided attention.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Bill Pedlar. I am have the title of the Chairman of Government Relations for the Alaska Travel Industry Association. In my day job, I am president of Nightly Tours, which is a small tour company specializing in inbound vacation travel to Alaska. Has been in business for over 45 years, doing that one basic task. I think I could answer a few of the questions through the chair that have been raised. Most notably, first for through the chair to Speaker Chenault, while we do recognize the Kenai is a hugely important area in tourism, we use the definitions of the areas as is currently marketed by the state of Alaska through the Alaska State Travel Planner. That's where the five regions came from to market the state from. And we thought that it would be easier to keep those definitions of regions that everybody within the tourism industry understands to know where the representation would be coming from. That's how we came up with those five regions.
So the visitor guides will match up?
Beg pardon?
The visitor guide, the annual one the state puts out, match
correct
up with that.
They link up. That was how we came up with that idea. The other aspect, I think, that through the chair to Representative Reinbold, we have talked many times about what are the rings of tourism, high density, medium density, low density. As a matter of fact, over the years, the travel industry has come forward with a couple of different plans that pretty much mirrors the way various managing agencies manage the state lands and federal lands. So from that standpoint, we think that there's pretty good synergy in that standpoint. I'm trying to think of one other aspect the board. Basically, what this board does is reformalize a relationship between the industry and the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development that went awry a few years ago and has been in statute basically since 1988. That was the intent, and to get a broad representation so that we have small to large businesses. We bring the best marketing talent to the table to help the state efficiently market the money. We don't spend a lot of money in the state. We're out marketed by some people, so we got to be a lot smarter than everybody else. Mm-hmm. And to date, I'd say we've done a pretty good job. We've managed to outfox most of the big guys. So with that, I'll be more than happy to answer any questions the committee may have.
Question? Statement? Bob?
Good job.
Oh, sure, if you want a comment, is Mr. Chairman, is that when I was chair of EDT, that was when it was the conversation about tourism and the board. It was at an all-time high, and so we were able to craft something together, but I think this reset is a good way of moving forward. This is a group of people that decide together on sustainable and practical approaches to tourism, because we want people to come visit us. Don't stay too long, but we want them to come back. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Joseph?
I have no questions. Thank you.
Through the chair, if I could make one more comment.
Certainly.
To Representative Chenault, when we discussed the quorum issue over on the Senate side with the bill, Senator Fairclough pointed out that having government appointees, House, Senate, have very busy schedules, and as such, she didn't want a quorum not to occur because there was something going on that the three representatives from the state side could not attend. That was where the nine came from. But we had originally drafted the legislation with 11. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Joe Jacobson, any comments? Or come on up. Maybe we'll find a question or two for you.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Joe Jacobson. I'm the director of the Division of Economic Development. I won't make this long-winded. I'm just here to reiterate what others have said about this. It essentially formalizes the relationship that the department currently has with the Alaska travel industry, and that the department is supportive of this legislation.
You're getting off easy.
Limited speech. That's great.
Thanks again.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else in the room that would care to testify? How are we doing? Boy, I wish all my bills
would come. Mr. Chairman, is it Senator McGuire Day?
Actually, it is.
Every day.
Not officially.
Nobody else in the room?
414.
Representative Chenault.
Mr. Chairman, I will just ask. I know that there's a member from the House of Representatives, one from the Senate, and one being the Commissioner of Commerce. How is it envisioned, and maybe I just haven't read it in here yet, how is it envisioned that these members will be picked? Will they be picked from each of these regions of the state? A certain number, will they be dedicated? Will the seats be dedicated to the certain regions? And if that is, how is that divided? Well, could you have 18 members from Anchorage and none from anywhere else in the state? That's the easiest way for me to put it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Welcome back.
Back on the record, I'm Bill Petter from the Alaska Travel Industry Association. Through the chair to Representative Chenault, that's a very good question. We have found over the years that the broadest representation with, if you wanted to use rough numbers, three members from each region and three at-large appointments always tends to work the best, because we have found that if we don't have broad-based representation with people bringing new ideas and new ways of marketing to the table, we miss part of the market. And so we as the association that will be charged with making sure that there is these members given put forward to the governor would make sure that there are very balanced representation throughout the state. We don't want people coming back complaining that they haven't been listened to. That does no good for any of us. And so that was how we left it a little loose intentionally, because we didn't want to get it too highly defined in case we painted ourselves into a corner. To get the best marketing talent available to the state.
Representative Sadler, followed by Representative Herron.
Thank you, sir. To that point, actually, there's sometimes informal or unspoken allocations of seats, you know, on state boards. Like, well, we know this is a seat. If there were three representatives from one of these regions, what three tourism sectors would it be? Big boats, aviation, what's the rough breakdown? What's the understood
Through the chair, to Representative Sadler, currently there are about six different classifications of tourism operators that we define at the state level. The goal of the association putting representatives on the board would be to have a balance. It wouldn't all be big cruise. It wouldn't all be big airlines. It wouldn't be all, much to the chagrin of some of our members, wouldn't be all helicopter operators. it wouldn't necessarily be all fishing operators. We need the balance between, you know, big, small hotels. Right now we have people that volunteer to serve from the big Westmark chain of hotels to the small Alaska Garden Gate B&B just outside of Palmer that, you know, sit on the board and give us marketing ideas. So we want that diversity. So
if you could just, what are those six general areas?
The general areas are, we have what we call them our accommodations, mm-hmm. attractions. Now I'm gonna draw a brain freeze here. Sightseeing, attractions, accommodations. Oops, thank you, Genevieve. Accommodations, activities, attractions, transportation, cruise travel, tour operators, and destination marketing organizations, predominantly your CVBs. Visit Anchorage, visit Fairbanks, visit Ketchikan, the Kenai Tourism Marketing Council. Those would be the broad categories that we try and get the representatives from.
That just helps get the appreciation. Follow up, last one.
Certainly.
Bottom of page 2, line 31, speaks that the 18 members appointed by the governor should be members of the leading statewide nonprofit tourism association. That is, just for the record, what organization?
Currently, we are the only ones that fill that that role. Okay. We defined it that way so that should an association change its name, we no longer are the leading association, the legislation could stand regardless of the name change.
Okay. And I'm certain...
New question?
No, follow-up on the same one. I'm certain you're ecumenical and include everybody who's all good and happy. Is there anybody who might be aced out of this, who might wish they hadn't been on it?
There, sorry, to the chair. There are always people who think they should be on any board, mm-hmm. any commission, any... What we're looking for and what we've always looked for in this relationship is people that want to bring ideas to the table. In past, we have had a significant committee, subcommittee structure that looks strictly like an advertising in various parts of marketing. Members tend to serve, people that are interested can serve on the subcommittee level as they wish. But for the key 18, we try to narrow it down from a very larger board to a board that we still thought was representative of all the various facets of our industry and got the geographical distribution of our industry.
Thank you, brother.
Representative Jones, or Representative Heron, then Jacobson.
Mr. Chairman, just a small question, a clarification. So the definition of South Central is pretty understood, the interior, the Kenai, but Southwest and the far north. So is that west of the Southwest? Is that west of the Alaska Range, all the way to the end of the chain, and up to the Yukon? And then the far north is north of the Yukon, and wrap around the coast to the Barrow and Kaktovik. Is that a loose definition?
That's through the chair. That's very close to the way it's drawn up in the book. Correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, Bill had a lifeline too. He was looking at the map right above the speaker. Representative Josephson.
Thank you. Through the chair, I'm just curious, are there segments of the tourism economy that feel unappreciated by the ATIA? In other words, is there some outlier group that maybe they're ecotourists, operators, or, I don't know, subsistence tours on the North Slope, that sort of thing? Is there any... I'm just curious and nothing more. Is there some group that's out there that feels unappreciated?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson. I would say when I started in this business many years ago, more years than I care to remember, I would say that was probably very true. I would say that there was some general animosity, some people feeling left out. I think that what we as the industry have learned over the years and grown up, realized that all-inclusive tends for better decisions and for better ideas. We won't always agree on the ideas, but everybody's ideas are allowed at least to come to the table and be heard. And I think that's all anybody ever asks for in this world is to be heard, have their idea listened to, and then see how we can move from there. At this point, I would say no, there is not any group that feels left outside of the way we currently market the state of Alaska.
Thank you.
Representative Chenault.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm sure the intent is to make sure you have all industry and all user groups underneath the tent. And I would just don't have an amendment now, Mr. Chairman. If it bothers me enough, I'll maybe draft up one. But I just want to make sure that the people from the peninsula are represented, and I think that you will do all that you can to make sure that all Alaskans are represented by this group. So, Mr. Chairman, I have confidence in this group to do that.
Representative Herron?
One committee discussion.
Well, thanks again.
Thank you very much.
Again, is there anybody else in the room that would care to testify? Seeing none and nobody online? I don't think I closed down yet. It's closed down. Committee discussion. Representative Herron.
Mr. Chairman, I move a conceptual amendment that could be dealt with after the committee meeting that we add Kenai as an area of the state that would be added to the five other areas.
We're going to be meeting with the sponsor later on tonight. You trust us?
I always trust you.
Two of us are from the Kenai.
You are trustworthy.
Any further committee discussion? What are the wishes of the committee?
Well, this is a side note, but Eagle River wants to be remembered, too.
You can have an anchor seat.
Okay.
They were never forgotten. They were never forgotten.
Central seat.
There's two of us here from Eagle River.
Rimble? Eagle yeah. River Valley, you mean?
And Eagle River. All of it. We have beautiful Chugach State Park in our area. Let's not forget it. Okay. Mr. Chairman, I move committee substitute 194 version R from committee with the individual recommendations and the attached fiscal note.
Seeing no opposition, the bill moves out of committee and on to the next topic, the latest finance. Meeting is adjourned at 5 p.m.